Welcome to the Friday Night Clive podcast with me, Clive Payne. In this podcast, we look back at the amazing charities, organisations and people we have chatted to over the past few months, all of whom have interesting and important stories to tell. Now, I was saying earlier on about the amount of abuse that emergency services workers seem to experience these days. I don't know if you know, but in 2018 alone, there were just over 26,000 reported assaults on police, 933 reported assaults on firefighters, 948 reported assaults on nurses in hospitals, and just over 2,500 reported assaults on paramedics. These are shocking figures, and I'm sure you can appreciate that. And sadly, they're on the rise. But why are so many of our emergency services personnel being attacked, and how can we show them our support? On the line now, I'm joined by Michael Howard, who's the founder of the Awesome Movement, a campaign to say thank you and show support to those who look after and support us in our darkest days. Hello, Michael. Hello, Michael.
Hi, good evening.
Thanks ever so much for joining me. Tell me, first of all, when did you set the Awesome Movement up and why?
Well, it's been going for a little while. It started off in September 2018, really as a result of the news actually on the BBC saying about paramedics who had these really, very nasty notes left on their ambulances whilst they're actually attending a 999 call. I just thought it was just unbelievable that someone would go out and save someone's life, get back to their ambulance to read a note that would say, "If you park here again, I'm going to smash you." I was outraged, to be honest.
Sure. So why did you actually decide to form this movement then?
Well, it started off by being so annoyed that someone would do such a thing. And my instant reaction would be, and was at the time, well, what I would like the guys and girls to have when they got back to the ambulance after attending a 999 would be an amazing note to say thank you so much for saving lives every day and serving us and being amazing. So I decided to go and do that. So I printed loads of notes, and we went round with loads of volunteers, and we stuck them on ambulances everywhere that we could. I'm talking of hundreds and hundreds, and that was like the beginning.
So how has the movement progressed then from where it began to where it is now?
Well, we decided to treat the guys and girls. So we were leaving actually £10 notes in envelopes with our nice notes, and suddenly realised that we probably weren't really allowed to do that. So we teamed up with some coffee shop people in London, and we got vouchers printed. And then we've had a lot of TV coverage and press coverage, and it's sort of grown and grown. We just spend a lot of time now going out and actually meeting the frontline people, whether that's paramedics, NHS nurses, firefighters, police officers. Mm-hmm. And it's given us a whole insight into what's really happening out there. And to be honest, it's horrific, the amount of abuse that they're suffering. And the figures that you read out are, in fact, are what's reported. There's at least double that unreported, because the reporting takes such a long time for everyone to do. They can't do their job. They don't even want to report what's going on. So it's actually a lot worse than we think. In fact, there was new figures released only a few days ago that pale these ones into insignificance. So it's bad.
What sort of reaction have you had from the emergency services people that you've met, or perhaps where you've left a note on a vehicle windscreen, a positive note?
Yeah, well, surprise, actually, and shock, really, because we've sort of gone over. We wanted to sort of hand out a voucher. Sometimes, obviously, they're not there, so we leave them on the windscreen. Other times, we go into hospitals, we go around wards. Today, we were in Norfolk. We went to the ambulance station near Norwich. We went to two or three police stations. Mm-hmm. So, people are very delighted to see us, and actually, they quite enjoy telling us about what's really going on. They're very grateful, appreciative, but people, I mean, even today, an hour ago, I had a note written to me to say, you've made my day, but I turned up with a cup of coffee and a donut. So if I'm honest, I think there's a bit of sadness there that says, well, if I just give you a donut and a coffee and I make your day, it sort of gives you an insight to how bad it is. So sure. Although I'm delighted that I make a small difference, I'm disappointed that that actually makes someone's day. But it is met with huge gratitude. But, of course, it's not us that wants the gratitude. We're there to deliver the gratitude on behalf of the public to say thank you for what they do.
Yeah, I was saying earlier on that in a past life, I used to be a special constable. Now, as you probably are aware, special constables are volunteer police officers and they do the same job as regular officers. They're pretty well, 95% of it or thereabouts, where they wear the same uniform and they turn up in their spare time to do that role without seeking any kind of salary. And I remember having to deal with somebody one evening, as I say, this was a long time ago, and I got spat at. Which, when I told people afterwards, they said, you know, that's so dreadful, they'd rather be hit than spat. But any kind of abuse is unacceptable. But I was concerned that this individual would have lashed out to some nearby members of public, and I didn't want that to happen. So I was trying to contain this individual as best I could. With a colleague, I wasn't on my own. But it was still very unpleasant. But abuse comes in many different forms, in the way that you've just described it, where people leave horrible notes on vehicle windscreens, to the physical or even mental abuse, really.
Yeah, we've seen so much. I've spoke to a policeman from the Met a few months ago. He was spat on, which is particularly horrible.
Yeah.
The guy bit his arm, and then the guy claimed that he had HIV, and the trauma to deal with that, and he had to be rushed to hospital. He had to wait for weeks and weeks for results of tests.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't work. He had post-traumatic stress. So I think the effect of abuse, you know, verbal, violent, spitting, against the very people, whether they're firefighters or police or paramedics, that turn up only to help, just seems to be completely crazy. And, of course, the other side of it is that no one's really saying thank you. People aren't going out of their way, which is the whole point of the Awesome Movement.
Mm-hmm.
Even if we can't stop or reduce the abuse, I think that we can, because 99% of the public is on their side, of course.
Yes.
But I think we need to go out of our way right now more than ever to cross the road and say, excuse me, I know you're busy. I just wanted to say thank you for what you do for us every day. We think you're heroes. And it's uncomfortable at first, but I'm doing it every day. I've sort of trained myself to remember to do it and to do it. And I feel great after doing it. And people say, you have no idea what an impact that makes to me when I hear it from members of the public. And I know it firsthand. I've now spoken to 200, 300, 400 emergency services people over the last 18 months or so. And I know that is really appreciated. And it does make them feel like it's all worthwhile. That's what we're trying to do.
And emergency services people go into very tense situations and they deal with a lot of tragedy. And of course, I think after a while that can get to you as an individual. It would to anybody, because we're all human and we must remember that they are human too. So the simple acts of kindness that you describe, where you just cross the road and say thank you and shake their hand, say that, thank you for what you've done. You don't know what they've just been to deal with, whether it was earlier on in that shift or the previous day. They may have had to have gone to something really quite horrendous, or if it's somebody that's in hospital, they've had a very trying shift where perhaps a number of people have you know, passed away on them. And that can really bring their own mood down. So it just demonstrates that a simple act of kindness, just by saying, you know, thank you, I think that's why it boosts their morale. And in the case of that one person that said to you, it makes their day.
Yeah, and I just think it's sort of me and a few volunteers doing everything that we can, which, of course, we can't cover the whole of the UK, and we can't really get the impact that we'd like. And the whole purpose really is to sort of get the public behind it. And it's not a charity. We don't need money or fundraising or anything. So some people have said, you know, we support cancer charities. And I said, well, of course, and I do as well. But this isn't about that. It's really just about...
It's being proactive.
Having on your mind, you know, to be conscious and say, I just see a paramedic pulled up in their ambulance, they're having their break, knock on the window and just say, hey, thanks. Or a policeman in the street, a firefighter, a nurse, anyone like that. You know, if you have the ability to buy a coffee or do something like that, then fantastic. But more importantly, it's just the recognition and a handshake and a thank you. And if everyone could do that and get behind that, the difference it would make to those people that serve us, I think it's huge.
I think also there's another thing that you can do. If you see somebody in a queue in a shop buying products or their lunch or something, let them queue jump. Let them go to the front of the queue because they stand a reasonable chance of being able to consume some of their drink or lunch before they get called to something else, because otherwise they'll end up, you know, let's say several places down the queue, they may have to just put their products to one side and leave in order to go and deal with something. But, you know, I think one thing that would be good to do is just allow them to go in front of you and queue jump, because at the end of the day, their priorities are greater than ours.
I'm glad you said that, because I was going to mention that as well, because you're absolutely right. And in fact, I was in a coffee shop in New York. Two cops came in, and the people in the queue insisted that they go to the front of the queue.
Mm.
The coffees were made straight away for the guys, and they were on the house.
Yeah.
And I think that makes sense to me. I think we should be treating all of the people in service with that level of respect, because for someone to go into a burning building to save your life, even your dog, for someone to stand in front of you and a guy with a knife, for someone to nurse your child, I mean, for not a lot of money, the love and the compassion and the care that these people have is extraordinary.
Sure.
But we don't treat them as if they're extraordinary. And I think if we could all do a bit of this, I think in the years to come, we would just have people who were much happier in the job, and actually more people would want to join and do those roles. I mean, they are, well, for me, they're heroes.
Absolutely. How many people do you have supporting your own work within the Awesome Movement? How many volunteers do you have currently?
Well, I run a business in London, so I've got on tap lots of people inside the business who are always on call for when we do something. But effectively, it's me and one other, a very good family friend. So there's hardly any of us. And we try to plan events, and we try to do as much stuff as possible. And we're using social media to help us with that, which is, of course, as we know, the way that word spreads these days.
Yes.
But no, this is very small. This is this is not an office with loads of people in. It's just what we're doing in our spare time, really.
Mm. So how can we get involved with the Awesome Movement here in the Black Country? What can we do?
Well, the first thing is that we have a website which you can Google Awesome Movement. We are on Facebook and we're on Instagram. We're reasonably easy to find. I think the more people that we can have following what we're doing and supporting it, then the more the word will spread.
Mm-hmm.
But the simple message is for all the people that are listening tonight is just to have it on your mind, just to go a little bit out your way. It's not a huge deal for people that you just see in the street.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it covers everyone, the doctor's surgery that you go to, the hospital that you visit, whether you're a patient or a visitor or whatever you're doing. Just take a few moments out and just go up to a few people and just say thanks for what you're doing. If you have the ability or the time, you know, whiz into your local fire station, take them a box of chocolates or some biscuits, say thank you, anything like that. These things are the things that literally make such a huge different. So the support is as simple as that, really. And if you follow us on social media, on Facebook and on Instagram, then you'll sort of see the sort of things we're doing. We post about two or three things every day, mm-hmm. And you'll sort of get the gist of it. But it is as simple as just going out your way to say thanks.
Michael Howard from the Awesome Movement, thank you very much for talking to Friday Night Live.
Appreciate you having me on.
It's all about you. It's all about you. Black Country Radio.
As Michael said, you can find them by searching on the internet for the awesomemovement.co.uk. Awesomemovement.co.uk. Let's see if we can set something up here in the Black Country somewhere. I'm sure somebody's got some ideas that they can take forward from what Michael said, and see if we can get some people doing that. And as he says, you can just go and approach somebody and just say thank you for what they're doing. It could be an emergency services worker on the street, or it could be somebody in your local hospital if you're visiting the hospital this week. And believe you me, it will clearly make their day. Something very, very simple. You are listening to the Friday Night Clive podcast. If you like what you are hearing, don't forget to subscribe to get the latest instalment at blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from. Now, on with this week's episode. Now, we've all accidentally cut ourselves or grazed a knee, making ourselves bleed a little. But what happens to you in an accident and if you lose a lot of blood? Blood makes up around 7% of our body weight, yet it's vital for our survival. Amongst the public, there is an army of donors who give up more than just their afternoon, but their own blood to be used in life-saving treatments, surgeries and emergencies. Now, I've been donating myself for some while, and I coincidentally made my most recent donation on Wednesday this week. On the line to tell me more about blood and how to become a donor is John Latham, who's the Assistant Director of Donor Relations at NHS Blood and Transplant. John, thank you very much for joining me. First of all, why is blood donation so important?
Well, it's really important because, one, you never know when yourself might need blood from a transfusion, but it's used in so many different forms of treatments. So most people may not realise that the majority of blood actually is used in cancer treatments.
Really?
And those, of course, are ongoing treatments throughout a long period of time. I think most people, when they think about giving blood, they see the car crash and think about the trauma that's got on the giving of blood. That is important, but actually that's quite a relatively small percentage in terms of accidents compared to things like, I said, cancer and normal operations.
So tell me about the varying types of blood then and what makes them different.
Okay, so you've really got eight main blood types. So you've got your A, your O's, your B, O's, A's, O's, B's and ABs. And they will both have a positive and a negative. Mm-hmm. And it's very important that when you have a transfusion, the right blood is matched up to your own particular blood type.
So you can't just give anybody any type of blood then?
Apart from things like O negative, mm-hmm. which is a universal blood type, which means that can be used with anyone. So when you have there was a car accident and the hospitals aren't sure what blood type you are until they get you to the hospital, they probably put O negative in you first, get to the hospital, then match you up with your actual blood type. But the other blood types all have important roles to play. So A negative, for instance, is the universal blood type for platelets. Mm-hmm. O positive is the most popular of all the blood groups and therefore will be used in the majority of transfusions. So every sort of blood group's got its own little personality. But it's very important that we match the personalities between the person who's the donor and the person who's the recipient.
So if somebody was given inadvertently the wrong type of blood, which I'm sure never happens, but if that was to happen, what negative effect does that have on the patient?
Well, left untreated, ultimately, it could lead to death, unfortunately. You're right, it's not something that ever happens. The hospitals have a very strong procedures in place to make sure the right people get the right blood. And there's clear clinical guidance of which blood is matched with which particular donation. So you're right, it shouldn't happen. I haven't heard of a case of it happening in my time, but it would be very fatal. And in the very olden days when people didn't know about different blood groups and blood types, when actually people did get the wrong blood type, you were quite likely to possibly die because of the operation rather than survive from the operation.
You see on Casualty and Holby City and other programmes like that, and they say cross-match so many units of blood. What's cross-matching?
Oh, you're getting the technical question for me now. Cross-matching. I don't know quite the answer.
Briefly.
I must admit, I'm not a casualty fan, so I'm not quite sure what context they particularly use it.
I'm assuming
I'll probably pass on that question, right, in case I gave a wrong answer.
It's probably... I'm assuming, it's my assumption, that it's the way in which you've just described, where, as you say, if somebody's blood group is not known, then you can put something else in. That's safe for them to use in order for, you know, until you can actually determine the actual blood group of the patient.
You know that as a substitution. So you're quite right. There are certain blood types you can use where you can substitute. It's not the most ideal match. It's not the perfect treatment, but it's not going to kill you. It's there if there was a particular problem, one particular blood group. So, for instance, we have a subgroup called RO, which is particularly used in sickle cell treatment and is... found prevalent within the black community. Mm-hmm. Quite often we don't have enough of that, and we can substitute O negative or B negative very safely without it being a problem, but it's not the most actual ideal match in the long term.
How common is each blood type, would you say?
Well, each of them are different. So some of them are very, very rare. So your AB negatives and your AB positives, you know, you might be talking 1% of the population. The B negative is about 3% of the population. O negative is about 8% of the population, right up to the O positives, who are around 38-39% of the population. So each group is up there in terms of matching with the transfusion. Because if you think about it, a donor is just part of the population, and so the transfusion patients are part of the population. Where we're quite lucky is when there are problems, then as a whole, we were able to match because we've collected from a subset of the population.
Sure.
But when there's a major event, an attack or a major fire or something like that, that's where we potentially may have a few problems, because that event is pulling on a certain amount of blood which we haven't been able to collect up to at that particular stage. So big events, bigger traumatic events sometimes do cause us problems. Mm.
Is a particular blood type more important or valuable than others, would you say?
Well, not to the transfused patients. You know, we need blood types from every part
type
of the population, because the people who need the transfusions can come from any part of the population. We would use O negative more often because it's a universal blood. Mm. So it gives us the option to use it in times when there may be a bit of a shortage, or we need a very quick transfusion where we can't actually go and find the real blood that's needed until the person goes to hospital. So I wouldn't like to say one is more important than the other, but certainly O negative has other uses.
They're all valuable in their own way, aren't they?
All valuable in their own group, because to the transfused patient, they need the right blood being transfused. So to an A positive, if they can't take a B negative, there's no point in giving, that's not valuable to them at all. You want the right blood matched to the right person.
Sure. So if somebody's sitting there thinking, oh, I'd quite like to start donating blood, they've never done it before, walk me through the steps for somebody that actually has to donate, that wants to donate blood.
It's a very simple process. We can take people's donations from the age of 17,
mm-hmm.
and you can be donating all through your life as long as you're healthy.
Yes.
And we have donors who are sort of in their 70s still donating, so, and they've donated over many, many years. What we ask people to do is, you first of all will go to our website, blood.co.uk,
mm-hmm.
and there you just register as a new donor, and we then would send you a pack, a welcome pack, to explain a bit about donation, although there's quite a lot of information on the site itself.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you go to the site, suppose you've got all the various appointments around the country that you can book into, which obviously will fit your work requirements.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll send you an invitation to that particular session that you've booked into, which will tell a little bit more about the local area, if there's any where you can park, etc. And then ask you to turn up on the time that you've been allocated. And you would then come in, and we would go take you through a questionnaire. Which will ask you various things around your lifestyle, around how healthy you are, etc., and to make sure that we can obviously take your blood on the day. And then we'll do a little thumbprint test, and that tells us how much iron you've got in your blood at the time. We can only take it based upon you having enough iron in your blood. Because we don't, every time you give blood, you deplete some of your iron. And so what we don't want to do is make people anemic by actually taking more than iron than we should do.
Mm-hmm.
So we will do a little test on the day, assuming you're okay, majority of people are okay. Then you'll be taken over to a bed, and there you'll lie on the bed, and you'll have a donor carer there who'll take you through the whole process. They'll make sure, often one of the issues for first-time donors is they're maybe a bit worried about the needle. It is not painful, but they've got tricks that allow first-time donors to be less worried about the actual donating blood. The key thing is to distract people, to get people to look away.
Mm.
It will take your blood, normally about 9 minutes on average, on the bed itself, and then we ask you to go and sit in our refreshment area, sit down for 10 to 15 minutes. You can treat yourself to the biscuits and the... Mm-hmm. And the famous biscuits and the tea there, and then you should be able to go on your day and do whatever you're going to do for the rest of the day.
Why should people register to be a donor then?
Why should they?
Mm.
In terms of why, in order to become a donor, why should they register?
Yeah.
Well, the point for that is we need to get some basic information about you first, be able to actually get you all the information that you do need to be able to decide whether you can donate, because not everyone can donate.
Mm.
And there may be either barriers or reasons why we can't. And by registering, we can get you the information that will tell you whether you can or not. And what we don't want you to do is have a wasted journey, turn up and not be able to donate on the day. So the registration just gives us that basic information before we can then start getting into a longer debate around some of the key issues around donation.
I must admit, where I donate, your staff there are absolutely first class, and it's a very light-hearted environment, very professional, but very light-hearted. There's always plenty of music going, and it's a very relaxing and very positive environment, I have to say. I try and donate as much
staff,
as I can.
I mean, I would say this, but our staff are wonderful. They really are across the country. It's not an easy job because people are worried about the giving blood, needles, and all that type of stuff, and they have to keep people at their ease and themselves be seen to be obviously relaxed in terms of what they're doing. It's a clinical environment, so they have lots of rules they have to stick to, but they do it with a cheerful smile on their face. So, no, it's a great place to come to in terms of your donation.
Sure. In the news today, it was stated that more male donors are needed because their blood tends to have a higher iron content, and very often their blood is used in life-saving operations. How can you motivate more males to sign up to the blood donor register?
It's a really good question. Really good question, because obviously that's what we're trying to do with the appeal. We've been out today, going out, trying to explain through national media why we need more male donors. And you quite rightly pointed out one of the major factors is that a male donor has more iron in their blood, which means that they can donate four times a year, while a female donor hasn't as much iron in the blood, so can only donate three times a year.
Mm.
So, the maths immediately tell you that the more male donors we get, the more donations we're going to take over the longer term. But also, male donors are used, we use the plasma from male donors for trauma treatments, which mm-hmm. we can't use for female donors. And we also, we are able to use their blood for neonatal, which is the baby's mm-hmm. transfusions. We can't use all female donations for baby transfusions, because when you become pregnant, you produce antibodies, which would mean that we can't transfuse those into another patient.
Sure.
So blood from males, not more necessarily more important, it's got different uses.
Yes.
And therefore we need more male donors. But for every 100 female donors coming forward to donate for the first time, we're only getting around 70 male donors. So we definitely have an imbalance there that we were trying to close. Now, why is a million-dollar question. Our research shows that part of the things we do ourselves, which may be inhibited for males, so a lot of our recruitment, as in a lot of organizations these days, is in social media, and social media has a female bias. So by definition, by trying to recruit people through social media, we're more likely to bring people in who are female. But also, our research has shown in attitudinal research, when we've talked to male and female donors, it seems that, and I'm going to be, it's a bit of a generalist statement, but it seems that once a female donor starts donating for the first time, they really get into why, what's it for, how is it so important. And it just takes a bit longer for male donors to really get into that way of thinking. So therefore, as a consequence, we tend to keep our female donors over a longer period of time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's part attitudinal, part behavioural, and we have to find ways to overcome that. So we're doing promotions outside social media, so we're doing tying ourselves up with sports teams.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a big rugby promotion going on the moment. So things like that we will hope will bring in more male donors, but we're also going out in interviews such as this and interviews elsewhere to try and educate as to why we need more donors.
Sure. I mean, on Wednesday afternoon, I bumped into three of my friends there who I actually haven't seen for ages. So you're talking about sitting at the refreshment table. We didn't move for about an hour and 10 minutes, and the charge nurse came up to us and said, "Are you still here?" And we were actually having a bit of social, and they were more than happy for us to do that. So, you know, what actually turned, what you actually think is just a donation session turned into a whole afternoon of social interaction, which I think we all enjoyed, really. But after someone donates blood...
Oh, that's fabulous. Yeah. Obviously, we want everyone to do that, otherwise it would be a very crowded...
No, that's right,
session.
But we just got
it's
talking.
It's really good that people get to know each other
yes.
in a donation environment.
Yeah, and people make acquaintances there as well. So after somebody donates blood then, so I donated my blood on Wednesday, what happens to it next?
Well, we introduced a couple of years ago a very successful promotion where we would send you a text up to about 20 days after your donation
mm-hmm.
to tell you where your blood has gone.
Yes,
it takes
I get
that
those.
Long because we have to test the blood first and then take it out to the hospital. So we're not able to tell you which patient it goes into
because no.
data protection requires. But we are able to say, for instance, it's gone to Alderbury Hospital or John Radcliffe or something of that nature. And people get really interested in the use of their blood. But we've also now... just launched the follow-up to that, something called the Journey of Blood, where you'll receive an email, if we've got your email address,
mm-hmm.
which will trace, through using Google Maps, where your blood has gone from the manufacturing processing through to where it's actually ended up in the hospital, but
mm-hmm.
also give you a lot more information about your blood type and how it might have been used. We're not able to tell you precisely
because
we don't know the patient it goes into, but we're able to give you some bit more information that hopefully will make you think, well, that's really... interesting and hopefully motivate you to come for the next donation.
I think that's a good process because, as you say, you know, I do get the text. So clearly you take your blood away for the case of us here in the Midlands, it goes off somewhere to be tested and checked to make sure that it's all okay, and then it just gets allocated out accordingly.
It does. We will also break the blood down. Your blood has got different components in it, so
mm-hmm.
we will break the blood down and then... it will then be allocated to the hospital that needs that type of blood. And that normally takes probably 3 days
yes.
and to do it. But, of course, if there is any problem with the blood,
mm-hmm.
then we would obviously have a different process. And ultimately, if it was a big problem, which is very rare, we would obviously suggest you go and see your doctor.
Mm.
But majority of the blood is fine, and we just have to... allocates out to the appropriate hospitals.
I must admit, I had my thank you text this morning, so I'll just wait to see where it goes off to. If people want to find out more information about donating blood, how can they do that, John?
I said our online digital system is very good, and it gives a lot of information, but also gives you all the mechanics you need to actually join and to then find an appointment. So if you go to blood.co.uk, you can also ring up the call centre, the numbers there on the website, if you're concerned as to whether you can or cannot donate. And now they'll be able to tell you if you give them a bit more information as to whether there's any issues that might stop you donating. And they could register you there, or you can register said online. And then you just have to make your appointment online. And some people actually only come in to donate blood, and the rest of the time they just do all their donations, all change all their details online, and are very comfortable dealing with the company in that way. Others prefer to use the telephone system.
So you can use the telephone if you're not an internet user, then?
If you're not an internet user, or you want to talk to someone, you want that face to, you know, the voice information around some issue you might have, then we're very happy to talk to you. And there's a big call centre there that's available to take all of your questions.
John Latham from the National Blood Transfusion Service, thank you very much for talking to Friday Night Live.
Thank you, Clive. Good questions. Thank you. Bye-bye.
find out more about donating blood, go to blood.co.uk. blood.co.uk. And as John says, all the information is online there. Or if you don't use the internet or you've got some questions, you can ring them on 0300 123 2323. 0300 123 2323. Thank you very much to John Latham from the Blood Transfusion Service. That's your lot for this episode. You can catch the show live every Friday night on Black Country Radio from 8 p.m. If you love our podcast, please subscribe by heading to blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from. See you very soon. This is a Black Country Radio podcast, presented by Clive Payne, production by Andy Caddick and Alex Griffiths.